Cliff, welcome to the show. I appreciate the time so much.
It's nice to talk to you, Chris.
I had a great time, as I've told you, getting a chance to visit when we were both down in Mobile a couple of months ago for a golf tournament. And for me to have a chance to talk about the USFL days, having watched them as a kid and being there at Legion Field watching those games for the 2 or 3 years the league was in existence. You played the last two seasons, of course. But I could tell for you, those were Birmingham and being in the state of Alabama was a pretty special time in your life.
I there's not a day goes by when I don't miss it, and it was great to talk to you about it. I mean, I never get tired of talking about those days, but in addition to our conversation that weekend, you remember Joe Cribbs was there, and it was right. Nice. I haven't seen Joe for a while, but for us to sit down and talk, and with all his years in the NFL and mine, both of us, said the same thing. Joe said to me, it was the most fun 2 years I ever had in my life. And not just playing football there. I absolutely loved living in Birmingham and kicked myself to this day sometimes that I moved away. But Gene Stallings said I had to when I signed with the Cardinals, so I had no choice.
Yeah, I want to get to that story in just a second. But, Cliff, there are people that they know only the NFL as it is today. It's an absolute juggernaut. It's hand-in-hand with ESPN and of course, CBS as well. They've got their own network. But when you guys were playing in the USFL 83, 84, 85, there was not a huge gap at that point. You played in both leagues. You played in the NFL playoffs, leading Pittsburgh in the early 80s to a playoff spot. You played back after your USFL days there with Phoenix, as we talked about, for Coach Stallings. How close were those two leagues at that time?
I think that, in reality, we had maybe four or five teams that could compete. Depth was a problem. You know, we didn't have a 45, 50-man roster that was deep enough that we could have afforded many injuries. But I think Birmingham, Tampa Bay, Philadelphia slash Baltimore, the Michigan Panthers, the Arizona team, there were some teams that were right in there that would not have had a tough time competing. I think maybe kind of middle of the road teams. And people don't realize that there have been a lot of leagues come along since then. And the people that don't remember the USFL, they see these other leagues come and go, and they're all like minor leagues. It's arena football type players on a big field. But like the years Joe Cribbs and I came, hundreds of players came from the NFL to the USFL because we'd never had free agency, and the USFL was paying better money than the NFL to talk us into leaving. So there was a lot of talent in that league. Not to mention, we got guys like Jim Kelly. We had three straight Heisman Trophy winners go straight to the USFL. So it was a very good product. And had they just stayed the course and maybe listened to John Bassett a little more than Donald Trump, maybe it would still be around.
Cliff Stout, former Birmingham Stallions, Pittsburgh Steelers, and Arizona Cardinals quarterback, joining us here on Tide 99.1. You mentioned Coach Stallings, who had the tough stretch there in the NFL as a one-time head coach, but had the enormous success at the University of Alabama. Tell us about playing for him, what that experience was like, and you kind of alluded to it. It's ironic that a guy who wound up spending so much of his life in the state of Alabama had to convince you to leave it to actually come play for him.
Well, he came from that Dallas Cowboy regime where everybody on the team was supposed to stay in town all year round so they could be together, work out together. You know, back then they couldn't force us to come in and work out in the off season, but they wanted everybody together, and that was one of the stipulations of my deal with them, was that I moved to St. Louis, which broke my heart because my wife and I were building an absolutely sweet house out in south part of Birmingham, out in Inverness, and it was about 2 months from completion, and we had to sit down with the builder and say, we can't move in. I got to go. And I took
That's
my
always
kids
a
by
fun
the
conversation.
House. I drove my kids by the house about 10 years ago, and they almost killed me for leaving Birmingham. But But, you know, Gene was just, like I say, he came from that Dallas Cowboy regime where everybody was supposed to be there, and I had no choice in the matter. But it was fun playing for Gene. I mean, everybody in Alabama now knows what Gene's like. He's a no-nonsense guy, one of the best people you could imagine. The only place where he and I locked horns was me coming from Pittsburgh and him coming from Dallas. We sometimes locked horns over philosophies of what we could do.
Right.
But as you know, Gene's philosophy always wins out.
That it does. And still to this day, when he comes to Tuscaloosa, his philosophy still wins out.
Well, I keep hoping to run into him. I've missed him numerous times by like one day or 2 days because, you know, he's very close with Dabo Swinney and has spent a lot of time, made a lot of visits up here to Clemson, and of course his offensive coordinator from the championship team in 92, Woody McCorvey. He's a special assistant to Coach Swinney, and so Woody and I get together every time, and if we stand and talk for an hour, 45 minutes of it is Gene Stallings' story. So we both hold him in very high regard and have some wonderful memories.
Well, when I saw you in Mobile at the tournament, I noticed the tiger paw, and I was wondering the nature, and then it hit me. Good grief, that is Cole Stout. That is your son that's going to be the starter. But before we get into what he's about to go through as the starting quarterback this weekend, I want to go back to his recruitment. It cracked me up. I told you, Cliff, I've had the privilege of doing a radio show for about a year with Kenny Stabler and knew him when he was part of our broadcast crew at Alabama. I've spent just a little bit of time around Joe Namath. But getting to see the old Birmingham Stallions quarterback 2 months ago was a huge deal for me. And get to talk to you. It sounds like the head coach at Clemson kind of had a similar story when he called to recruit your son.
Well, I got a call one day from him, and he asked for me when he called the house. And I got on the phone. I said, well, why do you want to talk to me? I mean, I'm not the player. And he said, I just wanted to tell you, I feel like I know you because I grew up in Birmingham, and during the years with the Birmingham Stallions, because I never missed a game. In fact, he told this story on a radio show here yesterday. And he goes, I get this package in the mail from a kid named Cole Stout, and I was kind of curious. And, he said, in addition to going to all our games, then he ends up playing for Gene Stallings at Alabama, so there were a lot of conversations about me came up, you know. And so he says, I open up this packet and find out it is indeed your son. And he goes, I called the coaches in, and we sat there and we watched the video, and he said, we loved everything we saw, but he said, we don't recruit up north. And as much as we liked him, he goes, one thing recruiting up north, it's another thing trying to sell my fans on some damn Yankee quarterback. and he said, so we just said, okay, we're not going after him. And he said, I threw the video in the trash. And he goes, I was just getting ready to let go of his bio. And at the bottom of his bio sheet, something caught Coach Sweeney's eye, and he looked at it and said he was born in Greenville, South Carolina, which is where we moved when I retired from football. They called all the coaches back in and said, give the kid a call. He's a Southern boy. We can go after him. Now, I look back on that. You know, I bought into a hook, line, and sinker, but it's just a way for a coach to tell a nice tale and get you interested. But, you know, Cole had just committed a couple days before that to go to Wyoming. That's a long story. But, you know, he said, how can I not go there? I was born there, and I got to go take a look. So he called the coaches at Wyoming and said he'd come down. It was funny because I heard Cole on the phone. I left the room, and I finally put Cole on the phone. And here's my little kid who I still look at like he's, you know, like he's an 8-year-old, and he's on the phone with Dabo, and they're laughing back and forth. And Cole's like, "Yeah, I'll come down, but you haven't offered me a scholarship yet." And obviously, Coach Sweeney's telling him, "Well, you come down, and I'll offer you a scholarship." So they're going back and forth, and finally, Coach Sweeney said, "Put your daddy back on the phone." And I got back on the phone. He said, Cliff, he said, you know how this is in recruiting. How many players you hear about that are 6'5", 210 pounds, and you meet them, and they're 6'1", 180. He goes, if I meet him face-to-face and he's as big as it says, the offer's waiting on the desk. So we played Friday night's game, drove all night long, come down to the Clemson game, met Coach Sweeney right before the game, and he took one look at Cole and handed him his scholarship offer, and that was that. But Cole's been extremely happy, obviously frustrated that, you know, to have to sit and wait for 3 years, but he never, ever wavered or thought about transferring. I brought it up one day and said, maybe you should think about it. And he just said, Dad, don't ever say that again. I'm not leaving Clemson. So now he gets his shot, and he's very excited about it.
Cliff Stout joining us here on Tide 99.1. You carried a clipboard for a while yourself in the National Football League, watching one of the most dominant franchises, a part of one of the most dominant franchises in NFL history with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You had the unenviable task of following Terry Bradshaw. I would imagine, to a lesser degree, your son following Taj Boyd and the success he had at Clemson, very similar. How do you, if at all, relate that experience with your son and what he has been going through and certainly will face in the weeks to come?
Well, I mean, we've talked about it a lot, and every interview Cole's done since he's been here, he has said the same thing. Whether I've been the starter or the guy, the number two, because I've prepared every day like I'm going to start the game. And that's one thing I pounded into his head, when he came here as a freshman. I said, you've started every game and played the entire game since you were in seventh grade. It's going to be different now, but your preparation cannot be any different. And he's a very dedicated kid and a hard worker, very conscientious about, getting his work done so his teammates know that he's prepared. And so I was able to share. That's one part of my football legacy that, you really don't want to share about how hard it is not to play. But you have to be ready. And when the time comes, if you're prepared, then everything will work out. But it's hard. It's very hard to prepare because I know when I was in Pittsburgh, once the season started, I never took a snap of our offense the rest of the season. I mean, it was literally learning everything in the classroom. Dabo does a very good job of getting these guys a lot of reps. And even in his 4 years here, when we get a big lead, Dabo empties the bench. We had two games last year where we played five quarterbacks. Every quarterback on the roster got in the game. And there's been games where every player on the team got in the game. And Dabo does a good job of doing that, and it gets the guys ready, gets them some experience, so when their time comes, if their time comes, they're ready for it.
In the old days, you watch canister after canister of film, literally. I think Wayne Smith may have been you guys' video guy back then. I can't remember.
Yes, he was.
You now, with technology, can send film instantaneously. Do they send you film? Do you watch some of what Cole's going to face against Georgia and kind of share anything with him?
I haven't seen anything. I know this week, not only are they looking at last year's Georgia game, I know that they're looking at the Florida State game because Coach Pruitt, the defensive coordinator now at Georgia, was at Florida State last year, and before that he was at Alabama. So we're expecting them to do some different things. I haven't been able to sit down with him there, but he usually comes home every Sunday because now we're back in Greenville living, so we're only 25 minutes away. So he'll come, and now everything's on their laptop.
Sure.
And I can sit down, all the cut-up reels, first and 10, second and short, goal line, third and long, everything's cut up, and so we can sit and kind of go through it. And it's nice to be able to relate to him. Football, the spread offenses around and more prevalence of things have changed. But football is still football, so I can pick it up and look at things and relate to what he's telling me, maybe give him a suggestion here or there. But it's nice that he has somebody outside the team that he can sit and talk to. And, that's been a blessing that I've had that kind of relationship with him and had the career that I did, so I can do what a lot of parents can't.
You grew up in Ohio, I believe, played at Youngstown State. I know that. You're a follower of the game. I just want kind of an outsider's perspective on what's happened at the University of Alabama since Nick Saban's arrived.
Well, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, so I never cared much about college football. And, in fact, the very first college football game I ever went to was Alabama-Auburn when Bo Jackson was at Auburn. And so I've kind of, ever since then, been kind of a Alabama fan. And I've really enjoyed what Coach Saban's done there and watching it. I have a lot of respect for that program, and I would definitely have to root against them if they were playing Clemson. But other than that, I kind of pull for them. And when my oldest son was coming out of high school, we did go down to camp one of the Alabama camps and had the pleasure of sitting and talking with Coach Saban after practice for about an hour in his office. And I didn't realize it at the time, but he came up through the ranks, and there were a lot of coaches that he has coached for, staffs he's been on, coaches that have been on the staff that were coaches of mine at one time. So we had quite a bit to talk about. But, you know, he reminded me of some of the coaches that I've had. You know, like Chuck Knoll, a no-nonsense guy, and you're going to do it the Alabama way. This is the way we do it. And he's built that tradition very much like what Coach Sweeney is doing here in Clemson. There's a lot of, I think there's a lot of Alabama influence on what we're doing here at Clemson now. So I have a lot of respect for it. I like him as a man. I like him as a coach. And he's somebody that, if I were playing, he's one of those guys you'd kill a play for, as is Dabo.
Finally, I do want to get your perspective on Dabo Sweeney, a guy who we still think of as a young former player at Alabama, but he has done some tremendous things at Clemson. And frankly, if Nick Saban had not done what he's done to the degree at Alabama over the last 5, 6, 7 years, we may have an even greater appreciation for what Dabo has done.
Right.
Just what is it about Dabo Sweeney that's allowed him to be successful and relate so well to the players as he does?
You know, there's a lot of – you hear – I even heard it in my career. There were coaches around the NFL that were known as players' coaches. Raleigh Dox was a player's coach. But there's a very fine line between being a player's coach and getting so close with the players that you cease to be feared and revered the way that the player should look at you. And Dabo has a way of the players love him. He's honest. He treats everybody the same. But he's also a very strict disciplinarian. We got four guys sitting out the opener because they broke a team rule. And he talked about it on the radio yesterday. They asked him, you know, they put in their work. Have you ever thought about lifting that one-game suspension? He said, well, I'm sure they thought about it, but they broke the rules. So the rules are rules. So I think the players respect him from every way, not only the way he stresses the discipline, but he also gets along with them great. You know, last Wednesday they had the day off, and they went out and played golf. They were out at the lake doing everything as a team. And just so, you know, Raleigh did stuff like that, too. We'd have days off where it would just be a team day where we'd get together and have fun. And the players buy into it, and he doesn't labor. No player gets a break he doesn't deserve. If he breaks a rule, he serves punishment. And if you work hard and get your job done, he's going to get you in the game when he can. So that keeps the whole team excited. Like I said earlier, we had a couple games last year where every kid on the team played in the game. When we get up by 30 points, you know, if that happens with Cole this year, we have games where we're up by 30 points. He might only play a series or two in the second half, and then they're gonna get the younger guys in. And so the guys know they have a chance to play. Dabo's honest. He says what he means, and he lives by it every day. And you also see what a great example he is by the way he lives his life. He's got very strong Christian values. And you don't shove that get down kids' throats. You don't have to. You just have to let them see you living your life the way you live it. And he's a wonderful guy, which is why Cole has, again, going back to what I said earlier, never wavered. This is home. The day he got here, he fell in love with it and feels the same way today.